Blog Talk Radio.
Spider-Man. Good evening and welcome to Erie House, Only Timey Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Still chewing on my plate of worms... It's Dave Binkley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, and we're here along with...
I did not get bitten by a radioactive spider, but I'm here. This is I, God of the Gold, blabbling it to you all.
He was bitten by a raven bat. But
yeah.
But we're back to the horror game. Creepy crawlies. Arachnids, if you will. It's all about spiders. And we got shows from
Arachnid.
The Shadow. Yep, Arachnids.
Mm-hmm.
Shadow, Hall of Fantasy, and is this new to the channel, General Motors on Safari?
Yes.
We've done it before, but I could be wrong.
No. No, we have not done this before. First time.
Never. Not this one. I think we've done another Safari thing. Different
episode.
We may
have done a Safari program, but the program was called General Motors on Safari, out of South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Very, very different.
Fox Bane writes, does whatever a spider pig does. I guess that's Peter
Porker.
That
was from the Simpson movie, I believe.
Huh.
Well, no, there was a spider pig comic
spider
book.
Pig.
With
spider
Peter pig. Peter Porker.
Yes. It was Spider-Ham.
Okay.
Spider-Ham.
Spider-Ham. That was it. Spider-Ham.
From Spider-Ham. Spoof Magazine.
Okay.
Spoof Magazine. From Marvel.
Yeah.
Another comic great.
Yeah, it's weird. As much as it's a phobia that many people have, in fact, there was that great John Goodman vehicle, Arachnophobia, movie.
Yes.
But
yes.
As much as people are freaked out about spiders... They came out with Spider-Man in the 1960s, and that just took off. Like, oh, wow, wouldn't it be neat to have the proportional strength and ability a spider has as a human being?
There you go. And
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
As long as it doesn't come with an anatomically correct spinnerets, I'm there.
Okay. It's worth waiting for. I grew up with a lot of spider movies that were intended to creep you out, like Earth versus the Spider, Tarantula from Universal.
The first rocket to the moon had a big giant moon spider in it.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Angry Red Planet had some weird bat spider creature thing.
Oh, there you go.
So that was pretty prevalent, but I personally like them. In fact, I allow one to live in my basement at all times because he kills things that are creepier than he is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one big wolf spider running around somewhere.
I feel sorry for the spiders that end up in my house because they starve to death. There's nothing in here. It's weird because in Florida, it's like, you know, our state bird is a bug. You know, it's just, we're like really, it's really odd, but I don't, knock wood, I don't have bugs. But all the spider webs I run across, if I run across any, are bereft. They're empty. Well, they've got a spider sitting there like, hey, man, you got a hamburger? You know.
I get one right outside my sliding glass window every summer, and he gets the upper corner there because there's a light nearby, and which attracts bugs, and he gets to feast up there.
Yeah. The spiders on the outside, they're going crazy. They're yeah, wonderful. But
I think I've seen one that was I think I've seen one that was like Charlotte Webb, a cousin mm-hmm. that doesn't like pigs. It spun out on its web, eat more pig. You know?
Yeah. Eat bacon. Eat bacon.
Bacon. Yes.
Delicious
bacon.
Those are everything.
It lasted as long as Wilbur did, that's for sure.
Yep.
We had these little chameleon lizards here in Florida. We also have scorpions here, too. But every once in a while, these old lizards get inside. And I do everything I can to try to catch them and get, no, you need to go out. Because what happens is in less than a week or so, you know, you see poor lizard dried up underneath something going like, there's nothing to eat here, pal.
Wait. You have scorpions in Florida?
Yeah. Yeah.
You may keep them.
They're not like lobster-sized scorpions. They're about the size of your pinky in length.
Yeah, but
that's
but
big enough.
They'll sting you. They got the poison in them.
I did not know that. All of a sudden, mm-hmm. I don't mind mosquitoes so much.
Yeah. And
yeah.
Midges. We get midges.
Yeah.
Anywho, we got spiders tonight.
Yeah, we've got wolf spiders. Those are horrible.
Oh, I love them. They're big and hairy.
But they have an almost lethal bite.
Not wolf spiders.
Hey, you get bit by one of them, you'll wish that.
I'll test that out tonight.
Yeah, you got to check that out.
I'll tease them.
Put your arm in
them.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'll check the paper for the obits. Okay.
Yeah, right. How do you
Sounds
tease
good.
A wolf spider? You tell them, like, knock-knock jokes? What do you do?
I have a fly. No, I don't.
Oh. Oh, there you go. Yeah, he'll kick your butt.
There you go. That's how you tease
Ohio
a
man beaten by wolf spider. Yeah.
Here, boy, I got a fly. No, I don't. Nah. We got radio for you, though, that we're not going to tease you about. Where will we start tonight?
We do.
Oh.
I don't know. Do we want to start with a new boy?
Yeah, let's break out General Motors on Safari. You got my curiosity piqued.
Yeah.
Right.
It was a South African production, ran 1965 through 1969, remembering that there was no television in South Africa until 1972. And here it is, Adventure, Excitement, and Danger, highly acclaimed series of the African Bushveld. Most episodes were dramatized stories, although some were presented as true-life documentary. The series was produced by Michael McCabe. It was broadcast Friday evenings at 7:30. So we're almost there. And sponsored throughout its run by General Motors of South Africa.
Yeah, this one's entitled The Man Who Feared Spiders.
Mm-hmm. Odd thing about this little series is that it says some of these are real stories, but some of them are not. I was like, that was neat.
Yes.
Yes. Original air date, November 18th, 1966, according to six people in South Africa.
General Motors on Safari. Here is Adventure. Excitement. And Danger. Bringing you the African Bushvelds of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
Courage, says the Oxford Dictionary, is to be brave, to be bold. One requires courage to nerve oneself to a venture. Dutch courage can be induced by drinking. Courage. But What is it? I once saw a young Catholic girl plunge both her hands into a fire to save a rosary some religious fanatic had flung there. I've seen men exhibit remarkable courage in battle. But, say the experts, bravado of this type is akin to cowardice. The dividing line is a very thin one. My story tonight illustrates a kind of courage. You must judge for yourself whether or not Tony Alexander was a coward who wished to conquer his phobia, or a weakling whose fears would always loom large. Tony was an entomologist. He was the man who feared spiders. Alexander drank morning coffee at a folding camp table beneath an okume tree in the Gaboon district of French Equatorial Africa. He stared, glassy-eyed, at a green and yellow spider dangling 18 inches in front of his face. His clean-shaven upper lip and the tip of his big nose were white. The insect man was petrified.
The spider's harmless, Tony.
Hmm?
I know. Doesn't matter whether they're poisonous or not, they fill me with intolerable fear. Ooh. That's one reason why I'm in West Africa, to whip this fear. Sometimes I think I've overcome it, then I see something like a spider and...
Have some coffee.
Hmm? I will, thanks.
I've guided men with many kinds of phobias. Fear of horses, fear of things falling on top of them, fear of dead bodies, and several who feared blood.
With me, it's just... spiders.
The insect, hanging over the table, suddenly squirted silk from its spinnerets and plummeted to the tabletop.
Your fear seems so great, Tony. I think this trip might be a mistake. The rain's been heavy. The lowlands where we're heading there are chock full of things that crawl and creep and... Shall we call it off?
No. If this phobia, as you call it, stops me now, I'll never beat it. No, we'll go on. You see, this is why I became what I am.
An entomologist.
In defense, I suppose.
Okay, fine. I just thought I'd... Anyway, we start upriver tomorrow.
Brossard shouldered his rifle and went in search of a buck for supper. He took Lagoni, his head boy. Tony Alexander busied himself constructing his insect trap. This was a canvas sheet, 6 by 9 feet. It was erected like a sail. When firelight played upon it, the thing became luminescent, and insects came from all directions to cling to it. Their supper finished, the two men lit their pipes and drank a lot of tea, and watched the flying things bang into the canvas sail.
Now, what are you doing with that?
Spray, like this. See? They fall onto the ground and I sort them out.
With your fingers?
They're dead. Oh, they're quite a collection, here.
Yeah. Ah! Oh, no! Get off me! Get off me! Ah!
Ah! Wrapped around Alexander's finger was one of the most devilish-looking animals in Africa. A whipped scorpion, the size of a poker.
It's all right, Tony. You're suffering from sharp. Shut up a minute. Lie down, I'll cover you. I'll cover you. No, no. Lie down with it.
Here. Okay.
What was it?
Whip scorpion.
It bit me.
They're not poisonous.
This isn't the place for me, Brossard. I'm not even half a man. Was it gone?
You want to see it?
See it? Yes. Yes.
It's dead. Here, see? I trod on it. 2 deaths on that table tonight. That's where it fell. Right next to the spider, or what's left of it. You see?
8 legs.
The front pair aren't legs at all. They're whips.
Whips? Must be 30 inches long.
The fangs are along the inner edges, see? The prey never escapes. It's held. The scorpion sucks it dry.
I got away.
You're a bit on the large side.
Back 3 legs are all bent at the joints. Look. Seems that he's going to spring. A little more insects than I'll ever catalogue. Oh, I'm sorry. You must think I'm a...
Don't think anything. I've never laughed at a man's fears. But look, Alex, look. Beat that fear. Next time you see a whip scorpion, pick it up. No, I mean that. Pick it up.
I know you do. Pick it up. All right, I will.
Brossard planned to take Alexander to a small sandy valley up on one of the tributaries of the Ogui. The place would be swarming with frogs, toads, shrews, land crabs, scorpions, centipedes, wasps, and spiders. That night, he was resolved to helping his client. But the next morning, well, he thought more about it.
Alex, you're a pretty sick man when your phobia acts up like it did last night. I'd like to see you be...
Please, my mind's made up. I'm scared to death, but I've made up my mind to see this thing through. Don't say anything to make me weaken now.
Okay. A break, camp.
They set out for the red water Ogui. Death was to dust their feathers, but they didn't know that at the time. It was wonderful country for the zoologist. Giant squirrels, snakes, small antelope, okapis, red buffalo. But Alexander concentrated on butterflies, mosquitoes, wasps, bees, and ants. He studied spiders, too, particularly those that drape sheets of web over bushes.
I've lain every day for months on the psychoanalyst's couch and trying to find some childhood association that might account for my fear of spiders, but there seems to be no reasonable explanation. When a spider touches me, I sweat, my heart pounds. If I hold one in my hand for more than a second, I vomit.
They hit the tributary on the third day and followed it northeast. Shortly before sunset on that third day, they looked down on the little valley from the top of a lone, treeless hill. Where once had been firm ground, a lake shone like copper in the dying sun. They chose a campsite, and Brossard walked around the lake, looking for the streams that fed it. There were none. He knew that lake for what it was, a sheet of water overlying quicksand.
The water's only about 2 inches deep, covers quicksand. Everyone stay away from it. Don't even put one foot on it. I'd better warn the boys. Okay, Alex?
Sure.
He told them. They drew aside and talked amongst themselves for a few minutes, and then Lagoni approached his master.
What is it, Lagoni?
Pay us, master, and we will go.
Go?
Yes.
What do you mean, go? You're engaged at the end of the trip. What's upset you?
The sand, master.
It's only quicksand. It can't hurt you if you stay away from it. We'll talk about it in the morning.
But when morning came, Lagoni and his porters were gone.
I'll stick around a couple of days. If they don't come back, I'll go downriver and pick up a gang of Pakotos. Pakotos aren't so superstitious. Hope you like squirrel, Alex. I've walked all day today, but never got close to anything bigger. So, with the confidence of me and my 22, squirrel sup.
That'll be fine.
Have you noticed all around the lake, grass is coarse. Goes right to the edge. But the trees and bushes seem to shrink back, as if they're afraid of something. I've always thought there's a lot to the natives' belief in trees and things having souls. What's up? What are you doing? What are you doing?
Some sort of spuller. What?
Porcupine. Bushtail. Look, see that hollow over there? A sort of cave underneath the tree. The silk cotton tree.
So that's where he's gone?
Yeah. We'll see if we can get him alive tomorrow. Too dark now.
About that squirrel.
The insect trap glowed warmly in the firelight. Beetles crashed into it and fell stunned at its base. And, exactly as had happened 4 nights before, a whip scorpion shuffled close grabbed a beetle and darted towards the cave where the brush tail had holed up.
Alex, what do you plan to do when you see another whip scorpion?
Hmm?
What are you going to do if you see a scorpion?
Well, pick it up, I suppose.
Don't you know for sure?
Yes, I'll pick it up.
Okay. The time's come.
What?
There's a whip scorpion in the hollow under that tree. Go and get it. Alex?
Yes, I will tomorrow.
No.
Now. Now?
Yes. Now.
Give me a little time. Goggles. I'm not going to crawl into that hole without goggles. Goggles, okay. The bloody thing might have...
Goggles are okay.
Alexander's goggles were held snugly around the head with a wide elastic band. He held his hands before him, looked at them carefully, then, picking up a flashlight, he turned the beam on the mouth of the big hollow and strode towards it stiff-legged. He lay on his belly and crawled into the opening, only his feet being visible when his light went out. There was a moment of silence. Alexander backed out and rushed blindly into the sail-like insect trap.
Eric, what are you doing? Eric, come back here,
Eric! Brossard grabbed the frightened man, turned him round, and then almost screamed himself. A 10-inch West African spider was clinging to Tony Alexander's face. Towards the spider. Boss had tried to help, but he broke away, and seizing the creature with both hands, he pulled. The beast came away in his hand, all but one leg, which was caught in the headband of the goggles. Boss had reached for the spider leg.
Alex, stand still for the love of... Alex!
At that moment, the other man ducked and ran blindly towards the quicksand. Boss had grabbed the flashlight and followed.
Tony! Stop! Tony, I say! Stop!
Listening to Erie House Radio. That was part one of The Man Who Feared Spiders from General Motors on Safari from So Africa.
Quicksand.
Yep.
They wouldn't mention it if they weren't going to use it.
I guess.
can never get enough quicksand.
Wait, yeah, that was... Due to Tarzan movies, some of us youngsters really thought there'd be a lot more instances of quicksand in our lives. And
but
it
no,
didn't happen.
No, I got shortchanged.
No. Yeah, me too.
Not
what do you
nearly.
Mean you don't have a quicksand patch in your back? You don't have a quicksand patch in your backyard? Well,
not,
I mean,
not that,
I
not
that
the EPA
that
knows
of.
No, thanks. Until now.
No deer in my backyard, that's for sure.
Free meal.
There's quicksand.
Quicksand is there for the deer.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Hey, that's right.
Do you guys ever run across moose, M-O-O-S-E, in your area? Is that something
no.
that happens?
No.
You have to go further north to get to the mooses.
Yeah, way up to the great.
Well, further north into the west. Maybe. I mean, up by the upper peninsula of Pennsylvania or of Michigan, they might have it, but.
Okay.
Not in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, they're big.
You'd have to have
cutters.
You'd have to have a really deep quicksand. Pull to slow down a moose. They're really tall.
Wow, Fogs, you really have an errant moose every now and then?
An errant moose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every once in a while. Well, I'm pretty sure we don't have any moose here down in Florida.
Boy, I'd really have
you can
really have
you can tell
moose to
you
be
can
down
tell,
in Florida.
You have to listen carefully, Gar. You can tell by their mating call.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie. The spirits are about to speak.
Yes, that's my name.
Eeny, beeny, chili beeny.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah. It's like a gentle hooting.
Yeah.
Hooting in the night.
Hoot, hoot.
Frogsbane, I don't know if you caught the circumstance about that. I was sitting there doing things to turn into Gar, and they played that, and I was laughing so hard I had to stop what I was doing. I couldn't go on. It was bad.
I started doing it on purpose. I started doing it on purpose. It's like dating the girl who's putting a lipstick on in the car, and you purposely hit a bump in the road so you can make a clown out of them.
Yeah. Exactly.
Kind of ruins the date, but it's funny as hell.
Yeah, it stopped me in my tracks. I was like, oh, okay, I've got to stop because I'm laughing too much.
My work is done. My work is done.
Beanie, beanie, chili beanie. Oh, boy, that's just crazy.
That's what everyone should listen to as they prepare to go about their daily toils.
Exactly. Yeah.
Such in just the right mood.
Yeah. So this guy, so in following the little story we're listening to, this guy is so afraid of spiders that he comes in contact with one and he runs off blindly into the Sudan. I don't know what that is, whatever that, some thing, and runs smack into the biggest pile of quicksand you'd ever run across.
I believe that. Here's why. Real quick before we wrap up our tale, my sister was petrified of wasps, and one flew into the car while she was driving. Mm-hmm. And she got out of the car while she was driving.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of us are like, what the hell are we supposed to do? There's no driver. Thanks for taking the wasp with you, but now we're going to die. Thanks.
Now we're going to die.
Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a thing called irrational fear, and that would be one of them. If you leap out of a moving car.
Yeah. That's a fear.
I've never had that go on. I did have when I was a youngster, I would travel by bicycle because I didn't have a car. And there was a really attractive female police officer on a walking beat in and around our neighborhood. And I believe the story goes is that somehow or another, I accidentally ran my bicycle and myself into a tree as she was walking by. I was like, yeah. Keep your eyes on the road.
Yeah, can't imagine how that could happen.
How could that actually happen? Yeah. Hmm?
Keep all eight of your eyes on the road. That is if you are a spider, as we wrap up.
I hit a tree, and I fell directly into a big patch of quicksand.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
That's how you became a ghoul. All right. At Gar's origin, right here on Erie House.
Woo-hoo! There you go. There it is.
As we wrap up, the man who feared spiders from General Motors on Safari.
At the edge of the sands, Brosnan held the torch on him. He was already 30 feet out. He stood erect, his back to the hunter, still fighting the spider leg. The water was almost to his knees.
Right, that's in your back, Tony. Lie down, blast it. Down.
Alexander half turned towards him, and he saw the spider leg hurled away.
Lie down. Lie on your back and spread your arms wide.
I held a leg in my hand. Did you see?
It's a blazes of the leg. Are you sane now?
I'm all right. I'm just shaking.
Well, stop shaking, or you'll shake yourself down to the bottom of the sand trap. Lie on your back. Spread your arms. Lie perfectly still.
Alexander threw himself backward so hard that water splashed round him in sheets.
Don't make another move. Don't talk. Just listen to me. Don't try to pull your legs out of the sand. Don't.
If I just...
Shut up! I can get you out if you do exactly as you're told. Now, when I ask you a question, just answer yes or no. You hear me?
Yes.
Are you over your fright?
Something's happened to me. I'm not even nervous.
Have you had any experience with quicksand? Yes or no?
No.
Will you panic if you start sinking deeper?
Nothing will ever frighten me again.
Are you sinking now?
A little, maybe. Not much.
If you're sinking, it's because you're talking. Stick to yes or no. There's no reason to panic. Remember, if you can float in water, you can float in quicksand. Now keep your arms spread wide. Wide, Alex, wide. Keep your chest up. Keep it filled with air. Forget your legs. I'll tell you when to try and pull them out. You listening to me?
Yes.
I'm going back to get a rope. You all right?
Yes.
But there was no rope in camp. The porters had taken the only two they had.
Last is tough work. Come loose. Knock a platform together. He's struggling. If he does that, he sounds sane enough, but it might be shock. If he starts screaming again, he'll go under, sure. It'll have to be the hard way.
Rossard returned to the sand. He slashed the spot where he believed Alexander to be. There was nothing but still water.
Alex!
And then the beam found him. He lay as still as death.
Alex! Listen!
No answer.
Alex! I'm coming in after you. But first I'm going to throw a pole out to you. Hey! Hey, do you hear me, Alex?
No answer.
Oh, Dad.
He played the beam over the man. He was sinking at the hip.
Closest I dare throw it to him. My own. On the water. One end near the shore.
The other reaching towards Alexander.
He's 30 feet out at least. Pole's only 12 at most. Have to move twice. Don't hurry, brother. Calmly. You must.
He placed the flashlight on the ground and lay down on the firm bank. The sapling in the water was at right angles to his hip. Then Brossard rolled into the quicksand. He rolls over and over on the sapling. Two complete turns, the man in the sand on the sapling. Then he lays on his back, his arms outstretched. He rests.
Feet sinking a couple of inches. Ease them out ever so gently.
He rose again. And again he rests. He looks up at the sky. The sky begins to lighten. A yellow gibbous moon peeps above the ragged tree line on the hill. He rose again. Off the sapling this time, he lays, floating, unsupported.
Move the sapling across chest toward top of my head. Arms up. I'm thinking. Brotherhood. No hurry. Don't hurry. No. Slowly.
He lifts his head slightly and draws the sapling under it. Now it is stopped by the back of his head.
One arm over the sapling. Under shoulder blade.
He rests and then pulls the sapling under his other shoulder blade.
Feet down 12 inches. Left. Wing them up. Now work the pole down under hip.
He rolls and rests and rolls and rests until now he is within 12 feet of the other man. Suddenly.
Lie still, Alex! Still! What are you doing? Don't get up. Lie still, you son of a... Tony!
I know where I am. The water's over my belly now.
Listen, there's no need for me to come closer. There's a pole here for you. I'm going to try and push it under you.
Yes.
Don't try to move till I tell you. Got that?
I got it.
He rose once more to reach the other sapling. He thanks the powers that be for the moon and its bright light. The pole touches Tony Alexander.
Feel it, Alex?
Yeah, I feel it.
Now move one hand slowly. Get the pole under the small of your back. Got it? Now, gently lift your belly.
It won't lift. My hips just sink deeper.
Brassard is sinking deeper himself, but he takes a chance and pushes. And the pole goes under Alexander. Easily.
Reach out and get hold of a pole on each side of you, Alex. Work it slowly under your hips. Then rest. Rest a long time. Don't use your hands after you get the pole in place. Don't worry about your feet. Keep your arms stretched out. I'm going back to tear that insect trap into strips, make a rope, and pull you out. Can you stick it?
I'm all right, I think.
You can't sink with that pole under you. If you stay still.
And Brossard makes the long journey back, resting longer and longer as strength ebbs fast. At last, he makes it. The canvas sheet is cut in strips. A rope is fashioned. A 12-inch piece of wood is tied to one end. The other end of the rope is around the waist of the hunter.
Please let this reach him.
It falls across the man in the sand.
Okay, do what I tell you and work fast. Untie the wood and tie the rope around one wrist. Tight. Be sure it's tight. If it slips off, you're a goner, right?
Okay. You can pull my arm off. This rope won't come untied.
Start working your legs to the surface. Move first one, and then the other. Just a fraction at a time. Is the pole still under your hips?
Yes. And my arms wide.
The man on the firm bank talks to the man in the sand. Encourages him. For the other must not work fast at the freeing of the legs.
Easy does it. Take all night if you want. Gentle water pressure from underneath. Floats sand so each grain is suspended free. Queer stuff, quicksand. There's no traction because the water pressure exactly balances the pressure of the sand. Take the pressure away, and the water comes to the surface. The sand settles and becomes firm. A month from now, when the underground water's dried up, you'll be able to walk across this lake. Did you know, if you pull a cow or an antelope out of the sand, he'll charge you the minute his feet hit firm ground. A horse won't do that.
I'm all in. I can't keep on. I've got my legs straight up, and my feet are only down about 6 inches now. Got pains in my chest. I can't breathe.
All right, I'm going to start pulling now. If you've ever struggled, struggle now.
Suddenly, no strain upon the rope.
Alex!
But the rope hadn't broken. Alexander is within a few feet of the bank. Brossard sees him and pulls frantically, and the other man shoots forward. At camp, Brossard examines the wrist of Tony Alexander. It's cut to the bone. He pours antiseptic into the torn flesh and bandages it and tapes it.
That'll have to do if we get to Libreville, Tony.
Tony?
But Tony Alexander doesn't answer. He is in the deep sleep that follows exhaustion. Tonight's safari was a true one. The events I have described took place 9 or 10 years ago. The adventure was recounted to me by Alexander Lake. Before I say goodnight, something the playwright William Saroyan said, man is an actor. He acts all manner of men, and each one is a lie. Only the animal in him is real.
Join us again next week for another story of the African bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.
Maxwell. How about that? Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
The best way to get out of quicksand is never to get stuck in quicksand in the first place.
Eeny, meeny, chilly, beeny, the spirits are about to speak.
The moose are out. The meese?
The plane, the moose.
The meeses. Yes. So there we go with General Motors on Safari, a South African thriller. Did we lose Dave?
I don't know. Dave, are you there?
Perhaps he'll return. Perhaps he was bitten.
I'm sure he will.
By a radioactive spider?
Yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah, the weird thing about quicksand is it's more about, okay, you have water on the surface, and there's so much water, it's infused with the sand so that you get stuck. The sand creates a suction with if you had the pressure weight on it.
Right.
And that's the – now, however, if you're like in ankle-deep quicksand, all right – Or if you maybe need the quicksand, it's okay. In the circumstance that we're talking about in the jungle, it's the water's not going to get any higher unless it starts raining and there's a flood. The problem where it gets really bad is, say, if you're in a lagoon-type circumstance and you're walking around and you start sinking in the sand and there's water, but there's going to be a tidal change and more water is going to come. That's where people drown in quicksand, is when there's a tidal change.
Can you hear me
something
now?
Yes, we can.
I hear you now.
Okay.
You're welcome back.
Okay. Go ahead. All right. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Brother Gar. Go ahead. It's interesting about the quicksand stuff.
Pontificating about quicksand. Yeah, so if you run into quicksand like in the Tarzan movies, you're not going to drown.
The more the struggle, it sucks you down. Isn't that what quicksand does?
Well, again, it's about how much weight is being put on the sand and how far you go down as far as sinking. But at a certain point, things will even out. But if you're only knee deep in the quicksand, okay, so, you know, it's a little bit difficult to get out, but you can. But unless there's like a flood coming, you're not.
I always thought quicksand was more of a mud than a sand.
Well,
sand.
I think it was revealed somewhere that the quicksand that they used in the Tarzan movies was actually a pit filled with oatmeal and styrofoam or something like that.
Oh, how yummy.
What a terrible way to go.
Yeah. Well, you can always eat your way out. You know.
Yeah. Our next
show. Throw that guy a spoon. Yeah, he'll eat his way out of the quicksand oatmeal or whatever.
One of the dangerous spiders are black widows, and we've got a tale about the mark of the black widow from the shadow.
We do.
Yeah,
we do. Deadly, deadly spiders. And there are spiders deadlier than that, but that is one of the deadly spiders indeed.
It is definitely in North America. I mean, we don't have the big tarantulas and some of the other real nasties, but we do have black widows here. You have to be careful. And the shadow widow, be careful.
Tarantulas are really ugly, but they can bite and sting, but they're not as... Their venom isn't they're not as deadly as several other types of spiders.
Also, they're actually quite delicate. You could harm them very easily. Not that you would want to, and I do not recommend anyone harm tarantulas. You leave them animals alone, people, or you'll have trouble with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
that's right.
When I was a wee youngster, I was out on a nature trail. I picked up a mushroom and looked underneath. What was under there? A black widow spider. That was kind of crazy.
Ooh. I did want to mention the reason I'm bringing in some South Africa programs is that one of my volunteers is from South Africa. So every day when I send him his file to read, I also find a different South African radio show like this, send it to him as well. And he shares it. He lives here, but he has family certainly back in South Africa, and he sends it to his family back there as well. So it just I've been finding a whole new genre of stories, and it's interesting, very interesting. They have a lot of the true to life things as well as other programs like Beyond Midnight and SF68 for Science Fiction 68, and the one we've used, The Creaking Door, several times. But they're all kind of, I've also found just recently a whole collection of like 44 of their version of suspense that ran much later than our version. Very interesting told stories, considering that they're told in the 60s and 70s instead of in the 40s and 50s.
And we're going to bring them all to you.
That's right. When we're 327, we'll still be bringing you different shows.
That's right. I'll be on my eighth cent adventures, but we'll get there. That's right. Live, too. You know it. You know it, Bob.
Yeah,
good old
right.
Bob in there in the chat with Fogs Bane and us guys as we move on to the shadow with Mark of the Black Widow. Does we got an original broadcast date for this one?
October 27th, 1940.
So they say.
The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. As the Shadow, Cranston is gifted with hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's story, The Mark of the Black Widow. Suppose we have our coffee in here in the study, Margot.
Oh, I'd love to, Dr. Grant. In fact, I've been waiting for years for an excuse to see the inside of this room. Haven't you reminded me?
Yes. If I'd anticipated this opportunity, Dr. Grant, I'd have brought along my camera and notebook.
I see.
I think you have an exaggerated idea about the contents of this room.
Oh, but it's fascinating. Just look around this place, Lamont. Mummy cases and statues and old stone carvings.
Yes. I presume that most of these pieces are Egyptian, aren't they, Dr. Grant?
Yes, that's right. I did a good deal of work in Egypt about 20 years ago. You know, excavations and that sort of thing.
I should imagine that there's a fascinating story that goes with every one of these relics.
Some of them have a legend, yes, Margot.
About a pharaoh's curse, perhaps? Or an evil spirit?
Margot's been reading too many horror stories, Doctor.
No, she hasn't, Lamont. I myself have seen too many examples of strange misfortunes that have befallen the defilers of certain tombs to treat that statement lightly.
Oh, really? Well, I was only kidding, you know, Doctor.
Well, I personally have been exposed to one of those ancient curses.
What say? I've got to hear more about this.
Well, it's a very long and I'm quite sure a very dull story, so we will save it for some other time, shall we? Besides, this is not a night for mystic yarns. See, the moon is too bright and the sky is full of...
What? But someone threw a rock through that window.
Yes.
I just missed your head, Doctor.
Look, someone's running across the lawn.
Well, it's too late to catch him, whoever it was. Say... There seems to be a note attached to this stone.
Well,
yes. Perhaps you better read it, Doctor.
Let me see. Listen to this. Remember Egypt, Pharaoh's tomb. He who was dead is returning. When the votes are cast, I remind you of our duty. The signature is a drawing of a spider.
What in the world is it all about?
Do you understand it, Doctor?
Perfectly.
He who was dead is returning. Lamont, that story I said I'd tell you some other time.
Yes?
I'll tell it to you now because it concerns this note I just received. Do you mind?
Mind? I should say not.
Well, about 20 years ago, three other scientists and myself, all of us young and ambitious, were working on the excavation of a tomb on the upper Egyptian Nile. One day we broke through a hidden wall and came upon a room that was almost crammed to the ceiling with rare and precious jewels. We stood in awe at the entrance to that room, our eyes dazzled by the...
Here! Oh, do you see what I see?
Yes.
There can't be so many precious jewels in the world.
Hey, fellas, what did you find?
Oh, you think that was worth digging for, Willoughby?
Worth digging for?
Worth digging for? For the jewels. For the jewels. For the millions.
Well, what do we do now?
What do you mean?
Do we notify the authorities and turn this over to them?
Why, yes.
Yes, I guess so, of course.
Why?
What? I'm asking why. Why should we give up this fortune?
Yes, but Taylor, that's customary. It's a thing to do.
Who would ever have to know about it? Only we four have the knowledge of this hidden room. Now, do we tell the authorities?
Taylor, you're not serious about this? Why, if we were found out, we'd be disgraced, ruined in our profession.
Wouldn't a few $1 million compensate that ruin?
Taylor's right, Hollister.
Of course I'm right. All we have to do is keep quiet and we're millionaires. Millionaires! Why, we could buy the world!
So you see, Margot and Lamont, three of us did keep quiet. But Hollister talked. He told the authorities about our discovery. We were all resentful of what we thought was his disloyal treachery. We even made idle threats on his life. Yes, I was in accord with the others. My only excuse now is that, well, that I was very young. However, we soon forgot those threats as we lost ourselves in hard work. And then one day, when our job was almost done, the four of us were standing in the main excavation. Suddenly, we heard a shout of warning from the bank above.
Look out! Look out below! The wall is caving in!
Frantically, we scrambled for the opposite embankment. Then from behind us, we heard a cry of distress.
Wait, I twisted my ankle! Help me!
It was Hollister. We turned, started back to him, and then... We were too late. Hollister was buried beneath that avalanche.
Oh, how
awful. Laborers dug for his body all that night and into the next day, but it wasn't found. And the next evening, we sailed for the States.
What a horrible death.
No, you're wrong.
see, Hollister didn't die.
What?
We learned later that he reached one of the tunnels before the landslide occurred and covered him. And 3 days later, he emerged from the tomb alive.
Well, that's remarkable. But say, that's part of the message, then. He who was dead is returning.
Exactly. Hollister came back to the States today. He's been in Egypt all these years. Done some remarkable work, too.
What does the rest of the message mean? About doing their duty when the votes are cast.
Well, you see, Hollister's name is up for membership in the American chapter of the Royal Order of Scientists. Perhaps he fears that we will blackball him because of our ancient grudge.
Is it quite an honor to belong to the society?
The greatest honor that can be bestowed on a scientist. Naturally, Hollister's anxious to get it.
Then you think this message is from Hollister?
I'm not sure. But he has nothing to fear. Neither Taylor, Willoughby, or myself have any ill feeling toward him.
How does he feel about all of you?
Oh, that's a different story. I've heard reports that he thinks that landslide was a deliberate attempt on his life, which, of course, is not true at all.
Well, that explains everything in the message but the signature.
Well, you mean the drawing of the spider?
Yes.
Well, that drawing was on the wall of the room that was filled with jewels. The symbol of the spider is an ancient, never-failing Egyptian curse of death. Next member will vote, please. Next, put the ball in the box. Your vote, if you please, gentlemen. Place ball in box. Cast your ballot. Ball in box. Your ballot. Ballot. Mr. Raymond Hollister.
Yes?
Will you stand, please? You have petitioned for membership in the Royal Order of Scientists.
I have.
I regret to inform you, sir, that one black ball having been dropped in the box, your application is rejected.
I knew it. I knew they'd do this to me.
Mr. Hollister, please.
This is their second attack on me. And believe me, this time it shall not pass unanswered.
Mother, I asked you to come here tonight to help Taylor Willoughby and me find Hollister.
I see, Dr. Grant.
Yes, we must find him. We've got to convince him that we were not responsible for his being rejected to our membership.
You say, Mr. Taylor, that Hollister disappeared the day after the voting took place?
Yes, that's right.
Well, isn't there any way of finding out who did block Darling, Dr. Grant?
No. No way in the world, Margot.
No, there isn't any. My, I'm warm. My dinner jacket seems to be a bit too much tonight. Grant, I think you should tell Mr. Cranston about Hollister's threat, too.
Oh, yes, that's right, Willoughby. It seems the secretary of the club told us later that Hollister vowed vengeance against all three of us.
Vengeance?
Yes, that's right.
Well, if he seems to have vanished so completely, I wouldn't worry too much about that.
Well, frankly, I am worried about it, Mr. Cranston. Hollister's crazed brain is liable to seek complete revenge.
Oh, I'm not worried on that score, Taylor. Are you, Willoughby? I say, are you, Willoughby?
He's fallen asleep. Maybe it's the heat in that dinner jacket that did it.
Oh, I can't say that I blame him. Such a sultry night.
Willoughby, come on, old man. Wake up.
Wait, gentlemen. The side lights are poor. Put on that overhead light.
Why? Why, what's the trouble?
There you are.
Willoughby. Willoughby.
What's wrong with him, Lamont?
Willoughby is dead.
Where are we going tonight? Another explorers get together?
No.
Well, why all the mystery? Just who are we going to visit?
Mr. Willoughby.
Oh, I see. Well, that's it. Mr. Willoughby? He's dead, Lamont.
Yes, I know.
Well, did you plan to meet him at any special place?
Oh, yes.
Under an old tombstone, perhaps.
Oh, no. A much cheerier place than that.
Where?
The morgue.
Oh, the what?
I'm very curious to learn just why Mr. Willoughby died so suddenly.
Well, are you going to examine his body?
Well, not exactly, Margot. That's going to be a job for the Shadow.
Well, you're all sleeping peacefully tonight, my pretty. Yes. I like to see that. It shows that we're all friends here. Yes, all friends, yes. This lid down, I must open it. Oh, you're rather standoffish, my pretty. Oh, no, you're not too pretty, are you? But you see, I like the lids open so that you all may become acquainted. You're all brothers now, you know. Yes, brothers. is in debt, whether you be rich or poor. Hey?
Old man.
Hey, what's that? What's that? Did someone speak?
I spoke.
Who are you?
I am called the Shadow.
The Shadow? But I don't see you.
No, my hypnotic powers have clouded your mind, made me invisible to your eyes.
Oh. And that's very clever, yes. Very clever. Yes, you're a remarkable man, Mr. Shadow. Take it on the word of the mall keeper.
These bodies. All these bodies here. Are they in your care?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, of course.
Among these bodies is there one named Willoughby. He came here last night, died very suddenly.
Oh, that one, yes. He's over there on that table. He was a heart case, you know.
Have you yourself noticed anything unusual about the body?
No, no different from the others.
If you don't mind, I'd like to examine him myself.
I don't mind if he doesn't.
Now, let me see. Head untouched. No marks on neck, chest. Say, this gelatin substance on the chest, covering a little red mark. Have you noticed this before?
No. I never paid much attention to those things in a routine case of death.
In the future, old man, you should. Then you'd learn, just as I have, that this man's death was not routine. It was murder.
And we'll find out exactly what happened as we complete our tale in just a little bit. We've got the Shadow.
We got the Shadow, and we have an interesting story about finding a room and getting trapped in, but not trapped forever, of course.
Now we lost God.
No mention of quicksand in this one.
Not yet. It's early. It's early.
Not yet.
There's hope.
It's early. That's right. Yeah.
There's hope for quicksand. There's always hope for quicksand.
That's right. Got part two to go yet, so you never know. Actually, we haven't had too many stories with quicksand, have we?
Nope. But we'll find them.
It didn't turn out to be as big a deal as we thought it was going to be.
No, I'm very disappointing.
Well, is that like, let me ask you this, Gar, is that like the bogs in England where it loses horses and things like that? Is that like quicksand?
Probably similar, I would think, in properties at least.
Because especially in stories like, especially in stories like Count of the Baskerville and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
In the more.
Yeah, they say to stay off the bogs because it's dangerous. But I've never heard anyone fall into a bog. I'm not sure how that exactly works. Maybe it is. Maybe bog is another term for quicksand.
Or another type of, I think it's more of a mud type thing, and it looks rich
it is
in vegetation
mud. Yeah,
and stuff,
it's more,
but it's not.
Right. And so what the difference would be, I guess, sand is going to be individual pieces of sand and water that if you stir it up, it remains liquid. If the sand settles to the bottom, it becomes something that can trap you, almost like a concrete type thing. With the mud, there's going to be more other type of sediment in it that makes it more mushy, squishy, muddy-like instead of sand-like, I guess.
Yeah, and now I'm feeling cheated because in my Jeep, I've got four-wheel drive settings for snow, for mud, and for sand, but I don't have any for quicksand. I'm feeling cheated
quicksand.
Here.
Quicksand.
Yeah.
I would go back to
moving, it would be quick.
So. I would take that back to the manufacturer and question that. If it's not a quicksand setting, I don't feel safe.
No, I'm telling you. And then they want me to put a seatbelt on, and there's no quicksand escape, you know? Come on.
Yeah, how are you going to get out if you're just not thinking?
Yeah. I'm telling you, Detroit, better put your head on right.
That's it. You got to be ready for that quicksand.
Hey, one quick thing,
jump out at you.
A few weeks ago, you were asking about why crowds were reacting so much. I watched a documentary on Lucille Ball called Finding Lucy. And what it says, when she got to radio and she was the star on that, she really learned on radio to play to the audience. So you're probably quite right in what you're saying. They couldn't understand why they were reacting that way at times, because it could be that somebody definitely was playing to the audience, and like Lucy would on radio.
Yeah, good old Bob mentioned that some prehistoric tribe in England buried hundreds or more of their ancestors in bogs, and I understand it preserves them much like mummification.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay.
Now I'm hungry. Now I'm hungry.
You want a bog burger? What do you want?
Yes, a bog burger. Bog burger. I like the sound of that. Come on down to the bog. Bog burgers. Eat your freshly bogulated sandwich. I don't know.
Make sure your four-wheel drive has bog mode.
Yeah.
Yes. We can't be responsible if you get stuck in the parking lot. In the bog.
And don't get out and try to push.
Yes. Well, let's not get bogged down any further as we wrap up the Shadow. Mark of the Black Widow.
Who are we visiting now, Lamont? The morgue?
No. Dr. Taylor and Dr. Glenn.
Blind people.
They may not be before we get them.
What do you mean, Lamont?
I just examined Willoughby's body in that undertaking parlor.
And?
Mr. Willoughby was murdered, Margot.
Lamont, how?
I don't know yet.
Then Hollister did carry out his threat.
How'd you go, Margot? Too early to accuse anyone right now.
Have you notified the police, Lamont?
No. I didn't think it advisable yet.
What makes you believe that Mr. Willoughby was murdered?
A red mark that I discovered on his chest. A red mark that was covered with a gelatin-like substance.
Lamont, come in. I left the door open. Oh, Miss Lane, I didn't realize that you'd come along. You must pardon my appearance.
Oh, it's all right, Doctor. I've seen men in a shirt sleeves before.
Come into the study. Taylor's here. I called him.
Come along, Mother.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Cranston. Oh, you too, Miss Lane.
I mean to apologize once more for my appearance, Miss Lane. It was so warm.
Oh, there's nothing of it, Doctor.
I have a dressing gown around here someplace.
Knowing the doctor as I do, Miss Lane, he won't feel easy until he's properly attired. Here's your dressing gown, Doctor.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Taylor. There we are now. What is all this about, Lamont?
Well, Dr. Grant, first of all, I have just learned that your associate, Mr. Willoughby, was murdered.
Murdered? Hollister's making good his threat.
It's too early to accuse anyone yet, Mr. Taylor. Our main concern now is to save both of you from meeting Willoughby's fate.
Well, is there really any danger?
Yes, I'm sure there is.
But, Lamont, how do you...
Dr. Grant,
quick, catch him. He's falling.
Dr. Grant, Margot, get that chair over here.
I bet.
Dr. Grant. He's dead.
No.
Oh, this is too much. I'm the last one left. I'm going for the police.
Come back here, Taylor.
No. No, I'm going to protect myself.
That was a silly thing, but... Margot, come here.
Yes?
Look here. Do you see this red mark on the doctor's chest?
Yes.
The
yes.
same gelatin substance, the same I found on Willoughby. But this time I recognize the mark.
What is it?
It's the bite of a poisonous insect. And unless I miss my guess, that insect is a spider. The ancient Egyptian symbol of death.
What on earth are you doing crawling around the room on your hands and knees?
I'm looking for a very important piece of evidence.
Well, you're also looking very silly.
Well, if Taylor really went for the police, I want to find this evidence before the good defenders of the law overrun the house.
But if you're trying to...
Please stand right where you are.
Why?
Don't move. My evidence is on your shoe top.
Oh, what is it?
If I'm not mistaken, it's a deadly, poisonous black widow spider.
Hold it up.
Steady now. There. I've knocked him off your shoe top. Give me that ashtray, quick.
Here you are.
I want to catch it alive.
Oh, you got him. He's under that ashtray. Oh, he's huge, isn't he?
One of the biggest of the species. Well, Margot, will you answer the phone, please?
Yes, surely. Hello?
Hello. Is Mr. Cranston there?
Yes. Who is it, please?
This is Mr. Taylor's valet. Would you ask Mr. Cranston if he could come to Mr. Taylor's home at once?
Yes. What's the trouble?
Mr. Taylor has just been shot.
Right this way, sir.
Have you called a doctor?
The doctor just left, sir.
The wound serious?
The doctor didn't tell me, sir. In this room here, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Why, is that you, Cranston?
Yes, Mr. Taylor. How are you feeling?
Oh, fair. Just fair. The bullet grazed my shoulder.
Well, tell me, what happened?
Well, I really don't know.
I thought that you left us to go to the police.
Yes, yes, that was my intention, but when I left Dr. Grant's house, I saw someone lurking in a doorway across the street, and I became panicky and came right here to my study, intending to call the police from here.
I see, and then what happened?
Well, when I picked up the phone, something or someone was moving behind that curtain. I replaced the phone, and then the shot was fired. That's all I remember.
I see. You didn't actually see your assailant?
No, no, but it was Hollister. I know it was. Who else would make an attempt on my life?
And may I see the wound, please?
Well, the doctor said I shouldn't be disturbed.
Oh, is this the coat you were wearing?
Yes, yes. You can see yourself where the bullet penetrated.
The gun must have been fired at very close range, Mr. Taylor. The powder burns indicate that the gun was within a foot of your shoulder when it was fired.
Yes, it was close.
But I thought that you said that you were fired on from those curtains. They're all 15 feet from the phone.
Well, see here, Cranston, are you doubting my story?
No, not at all, Mr. Taylor. I'm just trying to get the facts straight.
Well, perhaps you'd better come back tomorrow morning. I can think more clearly then.
Yes, that'll give you more time.
What do you mean?
Oh, nothing, Mr. Taylor. Not a thing. Good night. Margot, I called to tell you that I'm sending that box containing the Black Widow spider over to you in the morning. I want you to take it to Mr. Taylor's house. Get a seek advice from him as to whether or not it's really poisonous, and pay particular attention to his reactions. In the meantime, the Shadow has a call to make.
You say that you found this spider in Dr. Grant's study, Miss Lane?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Well, why have you brought it to me?
Well, Mr. Cranston thought that you were an authority on such things and could tell us if the insect is really poisonous.
Oh, this was Mr. Cranston's idea, huh?
Yes.
Well, my laboratory is downstairs. Would you care to come down while I make the examination?
Why, yes, thank you.
This way, please. Would you mind opening that door, Miss Lane? My shoulder, you know.
Oh, yes. How is your shoulder? Is the vein healing?
Oh, yes. Yes, very nicely. You first, Miss Lane.
All right. Is there a light?
Yes, right on the wall.
Oh. There we are. I realize that you must have many more important things to do, Mr. Taylor, than to accept the spider, but Mr. Cranston...
You needn't keep up this pretense any longer, Miss Lane. I know perfectly well why you're here, why Cranston sent you. He knows that's a poisonous spider, and I believe that he has a pretty good idea what it was doing in Dr. Grant's study, doesn't he?
I don't know what you're talking about.
But he did make one mistake. He sent you here alone.
Wait a minute, I'm getting out of here.
How?
What do you mean?
That door that we entered has been locked and bolted. That's the only exit from this room. Oh, and incidentally, I might mention that the walls are soundproof. Quite immune to screams.
Well, I don't understand why you're doing this to me.
It's all very simple. You come to me with a curiosity about poisonous black widow spiders. Because of that interest, I am going to exhibit many of them for you by turning them loose in this room.
What was that?
I forgot. We have company. Very distinguished company. A gentleman that you have heard a great deal about.
Who do you mean?
Hollister. The missing Dr. Hollister.
You had an imprisoned you? Then it wasn't Dr. Hollister who committed the murder. It was you, Mr. Taylor.
This is Dr. Hollister.
Oh. In a cage. You had him in a cage like some wild beast.
That's an excellent simile. considering his appearance at this point.
Look at him. His glazed eyes and sunken cheeks.
Yes, yes. That's what comes of not eating for a week.
Why, you inhuman thing. That man is on the verge of starvation, even death. You must release him at once.
That's what I intend to do. He shall keep you company down here while you both entertain my collection of black widow spiders. You'll be released soon. Oh, so very soon.
What are you doing?
These boxes contain the spiders. I'm going to release the catch. Then I shall leave you both here in their company. They are hungry, too.
No.
Even more hungry than Dr. Hollister. All right, Miss Lane. Now, shall we get about it? What was that?
I wouldn't release those spiders if I were you, Mr. Taylor.
Who speaks? Where are you?
I'm right here in this room with you, Mr. Taylor.
Well, I see no one.
Perhaps when I tell you my name, you'll know why.
Who are you?
Men call me the Shadow.
The Shadow? No.
Oh, you've heard of me. Then you know why I'm here, Mr. Taylor.
No. No, you shan't spoil my revenge. I've waited too long, too long.
Exactly, too long and too late, Mr. Taylor.
We'll see about that.
Don't open that box.
You can't stop me.
Yes, I can by taking it away from you.
Wait. What happened? Give me back that box.
So you can add to your list of victims. Sorry, Mr. Taylor.
What do you mean?
You've already killed Willoughby and Dr. Grant.
Oh, so you know that, do you? Well, what of it? What if I did kill them?
Why? Why did you do it?
Because I wanted to avenge the wrong that was done me by Hollister. He cheated me out of a fortune. He wouldn't keep quiet about those jewels we found. No, he had to be righteous. And because of that righteousness, I've been a poor, struggling scientist all my life. That's why I killed Willoughby and Grant, so that their murders would be blamed on him.
So, you admit the killing?
Certainly, why not? None of us are leaving here anyway.
Keep away from this box of spiders.
You think your power of invisibility can conquer me, don't you, Shadow? But I know a way to put us on even terms. By putting out these lights.
No, stop it. Stop it.
Too late. You're too late,
Taylor.
I have also had the spiders. And when I open the box, they'll destroy you both.
Taylor, don't release those spiders, you fool.
A nice cut. Death in the dark.
They'll get you, too.
Now they won't. I shall wait in here with Dr. Hollister.
Baba, climb to the head of the stairs.
You didn't pick a safe place after all.
Hollister! Let go of me! Hollister!
I found a way. The box didn't open, Margo. The spiders are still locked up. You can release Taylor now, Dr. Hollister.
I don't think that will be necessary.
Why not?
Taylor.
See, Margot, when I explained the whole case to Commissioner Weston, he agreed that Taylor's death should be listed as accidental.
Then how is Dr. Hollister?
Oh, he'll be all right in a week or so.
Lamont, how did Taylor ever get the spider to bite Willoughby and Dr. Grant?
It was a rather ingenious device. Do you recall the gelatin-like substance that I found on the bodies of both men?
Yes.
The spider was encased in a specially prepared capsule, which in both cases Taylor slipped into the clothing of the murdered men. This capsule melted when exposed to heat, the heat of a human body.
Hmm. Our boy was very clever.
I first suspected Taylor when he chose to be shot rather than be bitten, particularly when the shot was quite obviously self-inflicted.
Hmm. Our boy's pretty clever, too. You know, Lamont, that for the past 3 nights I've dreamt that spiders were crawling all over me.
Well, that's understandable.
This experience has had one regrettable effect on my life, though.
So. And what's that?
I shall never again enjoy reading about Little Miss Muffet.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay.
The owls are good.
Shadow now.
Try right, crime does not pay, but the benefits are just dandy.
Early retirement, too.
Yeah, whether you want it or not.
That's right.
Excuse me. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Never send a bug to do a killer's job.
Yeah, I guess so.
These spirits are about to speak. They are always ready to
so
speak.
Much fun.
Yep. No, yeah, I like spiders. Enough. I think they're useful. At one of my jobs, I was one of a minority of men, and periodically the building would get spiders, and these women would scream, "Ah, Dale, will you take the spider out and kill it?" "No, but I'll escort him to the door with a stern warning not to return." And that's what I would do. I would scold the spider and release him.
Bad spider.
Yes. Very difficult to spank a spider.
He might spank you back.
That's right. I don't ever recall being bit by a spider. Have you, either of you gentlemen, been bitten by a spider?
I have once, and it swelled up and stuff. You know, it was like 5 mosquito bites all in one type thing, but it certainly wasn't deadly.
Yeah, well, you're here.
I'm here. Yes. But that was only one time I've ever been actually bitten by a spider. But
how about you, Gar? Any bad spider experiences?
No, I think I've been bitten by a skunk before, but I'm not sure.
A skunk?
I've been bitten by a ferret.
A ferret? Okay.
But it was, well, yeah, we were rough housing and... And one thing led to another.
The ferret really didn't mean it, though, right?
No, it was a bite and release type thing. Same with the skunk. I think I've been bitten by a fox too, but again, it was a bite and release type thing. What you know?
Wait, you were roughhousing with a skunk?
Yeah. We had
everyone.
I was living with my folks, we had three or four different skunks, and they were just so funny. They were hilarious. They were good people.
Okay.
And you could rough out. They would be play with them like a cat, you know, just they were just really cool. Or they'd curl up and they'd, you know, go to sleep in your arms, you know, either way. They were just, it was really cool. My first exposure to a skunk was I was working, like I was 17 years old, and I came home from working the late shift at Pizza Hut. So it was like, I don't know, midnight or something on a Saturday. And I got in and everybody was asleep, and there was a paper plate on the dining room table, and it said, "Watch your step." And I've got cold pizza because I got a pizza from that was left over. So I'm sitting there in the kitchen, and the light's on low. We had a dimmer switch. It was kind of low, and I'm sitting there eating. And from behind the refrigerator comes this little teeny skunk, no bigger than your palm. I mean, just. Comes, and that was what the paper plate said, "Watch your step," about was this little baby. They got a skunk. It's earlier, I don't know. And I was like, "Oh my gosh!" So yeah, I'm down on the floor playing with this little baby skunk. It was fun.
Spider
okay.
Pool.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I cannot say that I would want to do that. I think there could be an very adverse effect if it doesn't like you.
Well, the thing is that you make it like you. You know, you do things to appease. You know, and they're just it's a little baby animal. They're not going to mess with you. You know, and then as they get older, you're just another skunk. They're more funny looking than they are. You know, in their mind, you know. It's like,
hey, what are they doing, filthy skunks?
Hey, well, I don't know. Now it was cool to see it. To hang out with a skunk and just, oh, my, they are just so cool. They really are. So much fun.
They're cute.
Yeah.
They're cute.
Well, yeah. And if you could go beyond the cute and actually see yourself holding a skunk and it being comfortable and relaxed and falling asleep in your arms, you'd be like, wow, that's like an amazing experience.
Another amazing experience will be our next program from Hall of Fantasy.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're back again with the crawling thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Crawling things. Creepy crawlers. Ooh.
Yep. Yes. So let's get into our thing maker and hatch us a creepy crawler from Hall of Fantasy. The crawling thing.
The thing maker.
Was originally broadcast. Yeah.
May 18th, 1953.
Yeah. You can't
sure.
Make creepy crawlers without a thing maker.
And now, the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friends. We shall descend to the world of the unknown and forbidden, down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural reigns as king. Come with me and listen to the tale of the crawling thing.
I don't want to wake the others. Look at the cage.
What do you mean? The mouse. What happened to the mouse?
Let's go over to the cage.
The spider, it's doubled in size again.
I know. The mouse is gone. Now, look at the partition between the two pens.
But there isn't any partition.
That's right. And I don't think the partition slipped down between the two cages. I think that the two holders for it were opened and then the partition slipped down.
But that means you're endowing the spider with...
With intelligence. Yes, that's right. Remember what I said earlier? What would happen if the yes quantity also enlarged the ability of the brain to think? Well, it's happened. That spider will kill. It can think. That hairy, crawling thing can think.
And now for our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Crawling Thing.
Quite by chance, I've come upon this little diary of Emery's, the mirror of a man's mind. I shall read you only those parts which concern the experiment, the months which brought him into contact with his ultimate death. Oh, yes. It begins on this page. July 7th. Today I met Dr. Henry Sindler. I've always recognized him to be one of the greatest research men in this field. I applied for the position of his assistant.
I only hope that he accepted me. It will be a great opportunity for me if I manage to get the position. I remember when he walked out to meet me.
I take it that you are Mr. Bolton?
Yes.
Sindler, Dr. Henry Sindler.
Yes, I know.
Please sit down, Mr. Bolton. It distresses me to see a man like you nervous and shaky. I'm not going to hurt you.
Well, I'm sorry, sir.
Now, you no doubt are aware that I drive my assistants to a state of utter exhaustion, that I expect quite a good deal from them.
Yes, I'm aware of that, Dr. Sanders.
Yes, all right, good. And thank you for coming to see me, Mr. Bolton. I have many other applicants to see before the day is over. If you are accepted, we will notify you.
The doctor says
that is all, Mr. Bolton. Good afternoon.
July 11th. I was accepted. He called me this morning and said that he had chosen me to fill the position. Yesterday, I felt sure that I'd been rejected and almost accepted the position with Gates, but something held me back. I am to see him tonight for dinner.
This is Donna Atwell, Mr. Bolton, another member of the research team.
How do you do?
It's a pleasure to meet you, Miss Atwell.
Will you join us in the martini?
Yes, certainly.
The laboratory up in the mountains should be completed by the end of this month. I have a few things to clear up here before we start on this new research. I imagine you're willing to live with me and the rest of my staff?
Oh, yes, by all means, Dr. Sindler.
Yes, excellent.
I'm very interested in knowing what we're going to do.
Tell him, Donna.
Dr. Sindler is endeavoring to discover a method by which he can make plants and animals larger.
Larger?
Yes, Emery.
Well, how?
Every living thing, be it plant or animal, gives off electricity to a greater or lesser degree. By means of the electroencephalograph, science has already discovered the human brain gives off small microvolts of electricity. When a man becomes angry, this charge is strengthened. With the increased flow of electricity, his physical strength is also increased.
Dr. Sindler is looking for the chemical which is released into a man's body, along with adrenaline, which gives a man this added strength and which also increases the microvolts of electricity.
I see.
Your cocktail. Allow me to propose a toast to our work together. May we have success.
July 23rd. The laboratory is finally completed. Sindler and I are going up by car tomorrow. I am impatient to begin. July 24th. We arrived shortly after noon today.
I'll take you on a tour of the building later, Emery. Now I want you to meet the others. Donna, will you and Dr. Henderson come into my office, please?
Yes, Dr. Sindler.
Besides the four of us, the only other persons in the building are the cook and janitor. I dislike having too many people engaged on one problem. You understand, of course.
Certainly.
Miss Atwell and Dr. Henderson have been my colleagues on several other occasions.
Well, the building is perfect, Henry.
Yes, Henry, they've certainly given us everything to work with this time.
Emery Bolton, this is Dr. Paul Henderson. You already know Miss Atwell.
How do you do?
Glad to have you with us, Bolton.
Emery, you are to work on the effects of the unknown chemical which is released into the body at moments of anger or peril along with adrenaline. I shall try to isolate the chemical. You are to discover what effect it has upon the nerves and brain.
August 4th. Sindler has isolated the chemical. He calls it the strength quantity or S quantity. He fed some to a lab mouse.
How much time has passed since the injection?
3 hours, Dr. Sindler.
Let's look at the pen.
I hope we have more success this time.
I think we will.
Maybe I'm wrong, but the mouse does seem to be larger.
It is larger, Donna.
Then we found the formula.
We can't be too sure if it's safe. The other subjects died.
Dr. Sindler?
Yes?
How large will the animal grow?
We have no idea of knowing that, my dear.
Do you think there's any possibility of it growing too large?
What do you mean?
We're changing the size of that animal beyond all proportion to what nature has evolved. Do you think there's any possibility of the subject growing too large for us to handle? That mouse there might grow into some hideous monster that could destroy us all.
Back now to our story, an original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Crawling Thing.
I'm here in this seemingly deserted laboratory. In my hands, I hold the diary of Emery Bolton. Though there's nothing in his words that should cause me to feel any alarm, still there's something I feel that causes me to look back over my shoulder into the shadows. I continue with the diary.
August 5th. The animal is three times its normal size. It killed two other mice.
Emery.
Yes?
How is your part of the research coming?
I've written it down for you. Here.
Let me see. The effect of the S quantity increases the microvolts of electricity, and we go into...
Dr. Sindler?
Yes, what is it, Donna?
Paul wants you in the isolation room immediately.
Why? What's wrong?
I don't know. He just told me to get you.
Oh, come with us, Emery.
I wonder what's happened.
We'll know in a minute. What is it, Paul?
Henry, the mouse died a few minutes ago.
What?
Yes. As you know, the S quantity has an immense effect on metabolism. I imagine the animal wasn't able to stand the strain.
What are we going to do?
We'll try it again. Failure may mean nothing. Perhaps the animal was sick. We're not sure that the strength quantity will kill.
August 9th. Sindler told us to feed the S quantity to another mouse and also to one of the large, hairy banana spiders, a member of the deadly tarantula family, in the cage next to the mouse. I was with Henderson when the feeding began.
Open the cage door.
Right.
I'll set the food in here, like this. All right, close the door.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other one. Open the cage door.
All right.
There. That'll do it.
Paul, do you think the spider will react to it?
I don't know. I imagine so. That spider, I...
What's the matter?
Ever since I was a small child, I've hated them. I get nervous whenever I see one. This type, especially.
You're a scientist, Paul. You should be completely objective in this experiment.
I know I should, but that spider, that hairy, crawling thing, I wish I could forget my fear and hatred of them, but I can't. They always seem so cold. A person feels that they have an unearthly, inhuman intelligence behind their beady little eyes. Of course, that's not possible. I think it's just the same.
I wonder if the S quantity will also increase the size of the brain and its ability to think. Still, August 9th. 4 hours later, the mouse has increased slightly in size, but the growth of the spider has been amazing. Its size has been more than trebled. It's almost as large as a child's fist. August 10th, 3 a.m. Henderson woke me, and we went into the isolation room where the mouse and spider were kept in a double cage.
Be quiet. I don't want to wake the others. Look at the cages.
Now, what do you... The mouse. What happened to the mouse?
Let's go over to the cage.
The spider has doubled in size again.
I know. And the mouse is gone. Now, look at the partition between the two pens.
There isn't any partition.
That's right. It slipped or was moved down to the bottom of the cage.
Then that means...
That the mouse and the spider had nothing to separate them.
But what happened to the mouse?
Don't you know, Emery?
Unless
what?
Unless the spider...
And that's just what happened. And another thing, Emery. I don't think the partition slipped down between the two cages. I think that the two holders for it were opened and then the partition slipped down.
That means you're endowing the spider
with intelligence. Yes, that's right. Remember what I said earlier? What would have happened if the S quantity also enlarged the ability of the brain to think? Well, it has happened. That spider will kill. It can think. That hairy... crawling thing can think.
That's some spider. He can write. He can think. He can do math.
He can probably do math better than I can.
But can he use a slide rule?
That is an art. The slide rule is an art. Never had one.
I don't. Go ahead.
No, he just said he never had one. I haven't either.
Yeah.
I have.
In our school, they were just phasing them out. They were starting to talk about them, their computers that were coming out soon.
Yeah.
And they did.
I was in junior high school. That's when they first started getting those handheld calculators, and you weren't allowed to use them.
Nope.
Because it gave you an unfair advantage, and you didn't really learn what you were doing by using them. By the time my son was in high school, he had to have this $95 calculator, or he couldn't take his class.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like a Texas TR80 or something.
Yes.
Texas.
Yes, I had one of those.
Yes.
Yeah.
It does all the trigonometrical functions. Like sine.
Trigonometrical cosines and all that other stuff. And we thought cosigning was just for a loan. Little did we know.
Little did we know.
I don't know if it was a comparison that was found in a comic book or I saw it somewhere else, but there was some information I ran across in my life that said that all of the animals and insects and this, that, and the other, they would have to be a completely different species because you couldn't take, say, an ant that has proportionately, if you were to take an ant and make it the size of a human being, it would be enormously powerful. However, the effects of gravity on it would make it so that its body would be too cumbersome. It couldn't move.
There is no gravity.
They only work in the size that they are. as well, if you took a spider and increased it in size, it couldn't move.
I'm a gravity denier.
You're a gravity denier? Oh, okay.
I am. Okay. Gravity denier.
Yeah.
It's almost like being a flat earther. Things. It's close.
Yeah, he has to keep catching things as they fall off his floor. Yeah.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Put it back down again. Yeah. Gravity denier.
No, I just keep falling off of crap.
Well, the day that you, to be a true gravity denier would be the day you fall off of something and then you float to, there you go.
Yeah, I'll float.
You just float away.
Float on.
Good old Bob was mentioning, they don't have skunks, but he's befriending a possum. And we had a possum when I was a kid as well. And I didn't realize how many teeth it had. But, man, that is one – that's a lot of teeth in one mouth.
Yep.
Everybody has local skunks. They just disguise themselves as politicians.
Yes.
There was a problem some town was having where they were overrun with skunks, and nobody could figure it out. And then finally, the city said, all you people that are feeding the feral cats at night, stop it. And the skunks went away. Provide them a food source. Yeah.
Yeah,
they're going to.
And it was so cool because, I mean, they took a camera out at night and there was, like, skunks everywhere. And it was like, oh, my God, wow. And then someone said, stop feeding the cats. And they did. And then the skunks disappeared. It's like they packed up, they got in a van, you never saw them again.
Van. The skunk-mobile.
The skunk-mobile.
That stinks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, man, your car really stinks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
All of fantasy. Good build up. Let's see how it wraps up as we complete and continue with The Crawling Thing. Scary.
August 10th, forenoon. I didn't get much of a chance to see Sindler before 11. When I did, I discovered Henderson had already told him what had happened in the isolation room. And you know about the spider.
Yes, Emery, I do. Henderson told me earlier.
What do you think about it?
Think? What do you mean?
Don't you think we ought to destroy it?
Destroy it? Of course not. This may be what we're looking for, Emery. This may lead us to success.
But, Dr. Sindler, it might be dangerous.
Yes, it might be. But you remember that the development of the atomic bomb was dangerous, and so is the research going on in countless laboratories across the nation, across the world, Emery.
That spider has intelligence, Dr. Sindler, a crafty, cunning intelligence.
Yes, I know that. We have found a new formula to increase the intelligence and size of an animal. And, Emery, it will increase man's intelligence, too.
Our contribution to the science of the world will be invaluable. There's nothing to worry about, absolutely nothing.
August 15th. The spider has grown so large that it cannot be kept in the cage anymore. The isolation room is its pen now. It has the run of the entire room. It's as large as a large dog. I must admit that every time I enter the isolation room, I'm nervous lest that thing should attack me. But it generally stays over in one corner of the room. Apparently, it has no desire to harm us. August 25th. Donna and I had taken a stroll outside the laboratory.
Emery.
Yes?
Emery, I've been with Dr. Sender for several years. In all that time, he's never made a mistake. That is, up to now.
What do you mean, Donna?
I think he's created something that will only bring evil. That will only... Oh, I wish I had the words to express myself.
I know exactly how you feel, Donna. I've talked to him about this before. I'm going to talk to him again when we get back.
I wish you would, Emery. I wish you would.
What are you doing in here, Emery?
I want to talk to you, Dr. Sindler.
Can't it wait till later?
No. That noise, what...
It's the sound of the spider as it moves closer to us. What did you want to say, Emery?
I'll be quite frank about it, sir. I think we should destroy it.
Why, that's nonsense, Emery.
No, it's not. It's true we may learn something. It's true that we may even succeed in our research, but let's start over again. Let's experiment with something else, something that doesn't look like a monstrous throwback to a prehistoric age. It crawls and slides across the floor with its large, beady eyes always open, staring at you. Let's destroy it. What's the matter with...
It's coming towards us. Come with me, Harry. Quickly.
Right. The creature. It was crawling towards us.
I wonder if it can understand us. I wonder if it knows what we're saying.
Either that or it sensed that I was urging its destruction. Maybe I'm wrong, Emery. But I feel there's something malevolent about that spider. I get the feeling that it's waiting for the right moment. Waiting for the time when it will kill us.
Back now to our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Crawling Thing.
I am beginning to feel some of the terror that Emery Bolton must have felt. I'm beginning to feel the presence of the crawling thing about which he writes through the words upon these pages. The diary continues.
September 8th. The cook and janitor left today. If we remain here, we'll be forced to do all the work they did. Henderson has been acting queerly. With a strange, haunted look to his eyes. He barely eats at all. Either he's ill physically or mentally. What's the matter with you, Paul?
What do you mean?
You look ill. You're not yourself.
Can you be yourself, Emery? That crawling monster in the isolation room? Well, can you?
No, not exactly.
Let me tell you something, Emery. My dreams, I see it. My dreams in the dead of night. I see those beady eyes looking for me, trying to pierce the darkness. And I feel drawn to it. As if it hypnotizes me. And I feel that I'm caught in its web. Just like a fly, Emery. Just like a fly.
It's only your imagination.
I'm not insane, if that's what you think. And I'm quickly being driven there. Did you ever look at those eyes for any length of time, Emery? Did you ever see the hatred and loathing and evil mirrored in them? I'm not imagining it. I see it. When the opportunity comes, I'm going to destroy it. Sindler or no Sindler, I swear to you, I'll kill it.
October 10th. Henderson has been so quiet lately that I know he has some plan in his mind. Some plan that will culminate in the destruction of the spider. Sindler hasn't noticed any change in Henderson. He's engrossed in his work. October 16th. Henderson whispered to me this evening that tonight he will kill the spider. I sit in my room and write this, with only the desk lamp lit. It is almost 11 o'clock now, and I have the feeling that the moment is drawing near.
I heard it scream.
What happened? I don't know. I think we may find...
found the answer in the isolation room. Come with me.
You don't mean that Henderson went in there alone?
I'm afraid he did.
But that's against all my orders. Why would he want to go in there?
Let's kill it.
What do you mean?
He hated and feared the spot. We'll see what happened right now.
Here's the key.
We don't need it. The door's open.
Turn on the light.
Good heavens. Back. Back to the other side of the room.
I seem to understand you, Dr. Simpson.
Probably from the tone of my voice. Now, to examine Henderson. He's dead.
Dead?
Yes. After all, in the spider's original size, the poison could kill a man. Here, give me a hand. Help me get him out of here.
All right.
Look out! The spider's coming toward you.
Help me with Henderson. Hurry!
All right. Come on, let's get out of here.
Hurry!
Lock the door, Donna.
Yes, of course.
I don't want that thing to get out of that room.
Don't you think we should destroy it?
No! Henderson was a fool. He went in there to kill the spider. I think the spider sensed it. That's why Henderson's dead. We are still going on with the experiment.
October 17th, we buried Henderson in the graying light of dawn. Even Sindler was quiet. October 18th, I am in charge of feeding it. Donna and I were in the isolation room today when a curious thing happened.
Emery, look.
What's wrong?
The spider. It's crawling over to the table where the S quantity is.
I wonder if...
If what?
The spider's trying to get more of the S quantity. Stop growing now because we stopped the injection.
If it were to get more of the serum, it would grow larger.
Going to get that bottle and take it out of here.
Be careful, Emery.
Don't worry, I will.
Look out!
It won't let me get past.
Maybe we better get out of here. It's crawling towards the table.
We have to stop it.
We can't. It's lifting one of its legs. What is it trying to do?
Get the bottle, Donna. The bottle of serum.
Knock the bottle to the floor.
It's going to drink that serum.
Let's get out of here.
You're right.
What are we going to do, Emery?
I don't know. I don't know.
I heard some commotion down here. What's the matter?
Spider just got through knocking the bottle of chemical serum to the floor.
But that means that...
That it'll grow larger. I told you we should destroy that thing in there. Now it's too late. We don't know how large it'll get.
Be quiet. I have to think.
That's right. Use your mind now, Sindler, when it's too late. We had a chance to destroy it earlier, but no, you wouldn't have any of that. A man of science, that's what you are. But you're a fool, too, Sindler. A stupid, misguided fool. That thing in there could kill us all.
What's that?
It's trying to break the door down.
We'd better barricade that door. If we don't, it'll break it down in a matter of seconds.
October 24th. Six terrifying days have passed. That creature in the isolation room is out of all proportion. Though we've barricaded it, the door is weakening. It won't hold up much longer. I called Frank today. We can't leave that thing alone. If it were to get loose, we must destroy it. Sindler has a plan. We've placed explosives just outside the door. It will give way any minute now.
Only a matter of minutes now. When it breaks down the door and comes through that doorway, the explosive will automatically go off. I hope we're successful.
Why don't we just leave?
We can't do that. We have to see it destroyed. That's the only way we can be sure.
What if...
If the explosive does not kill it, I don't know what will.
The door is starting to give.
It's starting to come through.
As if I were hypnotized.
I can't move. No.
Look out! Look out!
Even though the last entry in the diary was marked October 24th at 7 in the morning, in my mind I've reconstructed what must have happened after that last entry. There is evidence all around me of the death and destructive power of that hairy, crawling thing. It must have left the building after what happened. I'd better get back to the city and notify the... In front of me. Something so large. Gigantic eyes looming up at me. I can't move. Ah!
So runs tonight's tale of the unusual, the terrifying, the unknown. Join us again when next we journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy to hear another strange tale of the supernatural. All characters and events portrayed in these programs are fictional, and any similarity to actual events or persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
Boom, boom.
A squeaky boot there, girl. There we go. And that wraps up our tale from Hall of Fantasy, That Crawling Thing.
It was getting bigger and bigger.
All the time.
Almost as big as one of Gar's morals, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Getting there.
Uh-huh.
House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Size does matter. Just ask the Ant-Man.
He was giant. I feel better now. Too, for a while, wasn't he? There's another bug.
He was giant man. He was Colossus, and then he was Ant-Man.
Yep.
Couldn't make up his mind, did he?
He couldn't. He couldn't. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, the Green Hornet. But only one Spider-Man.
I don't know if the Ant-Man was ever the Green Hornet. Different guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a cliffhanger serial called The Spider. It was kind of funny. It was a fun cliffhanger.
Well, there was a Pulp Fiction character called
Pulp,
The Spider,
yeah, exactly.
Who was essentially a lot like the Shadow, except that he never got invisible. I had some of those. I had at least one spider book, if not more than that. But
I think if we did not have spiders, we would be overrun by other bugs.
Yeah, very well. I have never found any use whatsoever for a wasp.
No, wasps have to go.
Wasp, hornet, or yellow jacket, I got nothing.
Yeah, it's not happening.
They're not pollinators. No. They're just mean, angry things. I don't know what their deal is.
Yes. That's all they're good for is pain. Boy, is this clock messed up.
Is it?
Yeah, the Erie House clock is...
So what's on tomorrow, Dale?
I don't know. Maybe some radio. How about a CBS radio mystery theater? Mm-hmm. Called Black Widow. That's tomorrow at 6:30. Eastern to be here live, and we wrap up at 8 o'clock, just in time for
Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul on Twitch, but can be found on Facebook for times and stations and all that stuff.
Same bad time.
Hooray!
Same bad channel.
Mm-hmm.
You gonna give any sneak previews? What are you showing, or is it a surprise?
It's always a surprise.
It's a surprise to me because I can't remember what it was.
He only worked on it all week, but he forgot what it was.
There you go.
I got nothing. I don't know.
See you folks tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern. Ta-ta.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And
when next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Everything with the poof.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I can live with that.
All right, guys. I'm fading quick, so I'm going to let you go.
I am getting very weary myself, and I will be gone shortly. But before you go,
in that case,
did you get to watch the whole thing or any segments, Gar?
Yeah, I started watching the thing with the dinosaurs, and I was like, oh, this is so cool. And then I started working on the artwork, and but I've got it all down on my computer, and I'll check it out. So
I throw shows together like Ed Wood. It's like, I got people, I got time. Let's go. We got to get this done.
There you go.
I bragged on you there, Dale. I bragged on you.
Yeah, maybe too much.
I'm enjoying it.
I'm not worthy. But it was pretty good green screening. I think you'll like the dinosaur segments.
Yeah.
Okay.
The studio
segments. I'll be in contact with you guys a little bit later. I have got to go lay down.
Let's bring in the Mr. Durante and make it official.
There you go.
Sounds good to me.
Good night, all.
Folks. Good night.
Good night. Play
good night. Good night. Wah-wah. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. Wah-wah. What more is this say but good night? Wah-wah. We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and it could think it do. Good night. Wah-wah. Night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Yes, it was all about dreams.